Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing the investing gold rush and negotiating severance pay.
Yeah, Joel, we're going to talk about investing in gold, negotiating that severance pay, as well as several other headlines that we came across that we found interesting, because this is the Friday Flight episode where we talk about lots of different bits of news and how they pertain to our personal finances. But man, real quick, a quick little recommendation for folks. A previous guest who we've had on the show, Laura Vanderkam, she has a podcast called The New Corner Office that is all about working from home, which I'm sure more folks are doing that now more than ever. So that could probably be pretty interesting for them.
Highly relevant podcast.
But she also has a new book out there under the same name. The New Corner Office, How the Most Successful People Work from Home. Now, I wouldn't at all consider myself to be a part of the most successful people out there. So I'm not sure how this happened.
The slightly successful people? Maybe.
The moderately successful folks. But she's quoted me. I'm actually in that book. We're actually both in that book. Your name's in there as well, because she talks about the How to Money podcast.
Nice. Well, I'm humbled. I know you and I, man, we're both big fans of Laura and her work. And I think maybe that she would interview higher quality people for this book. But, you know, she slummed it a little bit, interviewed you, included you in the book. But no, man, you have been working from home for a long time. I feel like if anyone knows what they're talking about, it is you. And so,
very kind.
Yeah. So I think having you in the book as an example, as one of the people that she highlights, it makes a lot of sense, man.
It's somewhat appropriate. Yeah. That's essentially what we did is we kind of talked about some of the tactics and ways that I've gone about working from home for, you know, the past 12 years now. But if that topic interests you, we would recommend for you to check out her book, and we'll link to the Kindle, and she's got an audiobook version available as well, and we'll link to those in our show notes.
As any good podcaster should, they should have a good audiobook to accompany their print book, right?
Heck yeah.
Yeah. All right, Matt, let's get on to our Friday flight. It's a quick sampling of stories that we have found interesting this week. The first thing I wanted to bring up is that there's a new smartphone in town, the new Google Pixel 4a. It's finally arrived, and at a lower price point than the 3A did last time when it was launched.
Nice, man. And what's funny is that it's the 4A, but when you say it quickly, it makes it sound like 4A. You
know? like an excursion?
Yeah, exactly. But I kind of like that.
Yeah. So this is supposed to be just an awesome phone based on all the reviews. And for $350, man, it's basically got a bunch of like flagship features that I think people are going to be interested in.
What about you, man? Are you going to kind of join the ranks?
Well, every time
get a new phone?
Every time I hear about a new phone like this being released, it must be just my brain playing tricks on me. It feels like my phone's glitchier than normal and that it's acting
piques
up.
Your interest a little bit.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, maybe I should get that one. And if I'm going to get any phone, I'll be honest, that's the one I'm going to get.
Yeah.
It's incredibly well-priced. It's got the features I'm looking for, including like a better camera. That's one thing that I would like in a new phone at some point. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see. If it's as good as the reviews make it sound, I see myself buying this phone at some point in the future. But for right now, I think my phone is doing just fine.
You're going to try to resist that urge for a little bit longer, huh?
Exactly.
But, you know, if there's folks out there and you do need a new phone, it could certainly be a good option for many folks, especially as some retailers will, historically, they'll offer it for a limited period with a $100 discount.
Yeah, or like a gift card thrown in there to lessen the pain of that $350 price point.
Yeah, sweeten that deal. Amazon and Best Buy, they both did this last year with a Pixel 4. And Joel, you know, while we're talking about cell phones, we should mention Mint Mobile, where their monthly service costs just $15 a month. And that includes 5G service. So, you know, whenever 5G phones start rolling out, which, by the way, this 4A is not a 5G phone, but nobody's making 5G phones yet, but they're, you know, rolling out those networks. And so when 5G phones become available, you'll have that extra speed. Cutting down your cell phone bills is one of the easy ways that so many people can reduce what they spend every single month. And so we'll link to the Mint Mobile plan that you and I, that we've had for the past year, man. We've really enjoyed it. We'll link to that in our show notes as well.
Yeah, I think part of my hesitancy, too, in getting maybe the newest Google phone is that it's not 5G, right? And 5G is coming soon.
You kind of want to hold off for the new technology. But the thing is, it's going to come at a premium, you know?
And the phones are going to cost more, too. Like, they've announced the Google Pixel that's going to have 5G, but it's going to cost more money.
Exactly. And so even if it's available to you, are you going to want to pay those premium prices for just a little bit more speed?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think you will.
No, you're probably right. I'm totally willing to pay less for an inferior service. Like, that is something that I don't mind. I prioritize price over getting the top tier or highest end thing.
And, well, that's the thing, too. We spend so much of our time, you know, covered by Wi-Fi. And even 4G LTE, it's pretty dang fast. You know, like there's not much that I need to do on my phone that I can't accomplish with 20 to 30 megabits per second. You know, I'm not like streaming 4K movies on my iPhone SE. And this is the first generation SE, by the way.
You're old school, man.
I'm proud to say I've got like a 5-year-old phone at this point.
No, it's impressive. And yeah, I will say people always overestimate what they need. Most Americans don't use more than 3 gigs of data in a month, but yet they buy the plan that has more, when they could be saving money just by using less, especially because, like you said, most people are covered by Wi-Fi most of the time.
So true.
All right, Matt, let's talk about the investing gold rush. Right now, there's just so much buzz.
Or the gold investing rush.
Yeah, either way you want to say it, right? It works. There's so much buzz right now about investing in precious metals. Gold prices, they're at all-time highs because gold is considered a safe haven investment for everybody in uncertain times. That's what it's thought of, right? And as inflation worries increase, it makes gold this even more attractive investment for lots of people. But Matt, I think it's important for you and I to mention that our listeners should be aware about all the hype surrounding gold right now, right? We think it's best viewed as an insurance policy in your portfolio, not as an investment that you're turning to for meaningful growth through the decades. And if you do feel compelled to own gold, then we would advocate making sure that it's only a really, really small percentage of your portfolio, like 5% or less. And there are a lot of people saying that gold should make up 20, 30 or more percent of your portfolio right now. That's the place to be. And haven't you seen what the prices have been doing? But gold is a hedge. It's a safe haven. And it's not there to provide you with meaningful returns over the years.
Yeah, and there are even more and more infomercials out there, you know, of people trying to convince you to buy gold through their company. And, you know, the costs associated with doing so make it almost impossible for them to be a good investment. So if you do want to own a very small amount of gold in your portfolio, we would recommend that you do it through low-cost ETFs that hold gold directly, you know, as bullion, or ETFs of companies that mine and sell gold. Do make sure to, you know, do your research before you buy, but you can find ETFs like GLDM and BAR, B-A-R, for, you know, these gold ETFs with expense ratios of less than 0.2%. Your goal there is to reduce the fees and the expense associated with owning that gold. When you do own some gold, it ensures that your portfolio is less volatile. But that being said, we don't own any gold ourselves, you know, and we would recommend that most of our listeners probably don't need to worry about, you know, getting some gold in their portfolio as well.
Yeah, I kind of think about owning gold in your portfolio as like almost a bet against the ingenuity and creativity of our country and of the world, right? If you're widely diversified in massive amount of companies, American companies, worldwide companies, through your stock investing, then selling out of that and buying more gold is essentially saying, I don't think things are going to be better 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. I just don't think that's the case. I don't have that belief. I'm more optimistic than that. But Matt, let's talk about investing a little bit more. Some recent retirement rule changes have made it likely that you're going to see more private equity investment choices inside of your 401k available to you in the coming months. And that's another thing that you and I, Matt, we're not really big fans of. We don't love the idea of investing hard-earned dollars in private equity opportunities.
Yeah, we like to stay away from that investing aristocracy.
Yeah.
The private clubs.
Exactly. Yeah, that's just not something that we're into. And we think that most people should avoid that as well. And that's because the costs associated with investing in private equity are so much more than investing in publicly traded companies. And Matt, we've talked about that a lot on the show, the impact of fees on a person's long-term ability to build wealth. It just has this massive compounding impact over time that weighs down the amount that you're able to compound. And although you'll hear people tout the increased performance that comes along with these increased costs, well, it's impossible to verify those claims, right? And in fact, studies have shown that private equity returns are pretty much exactly in line with public market returns over the years. And that basically means you're going to be paying higher fees for the same returns, which is in nobody's best interest.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And, you know, there are other issues, too. You know, basically, we're talking about all the reasons you shouldn't dive into private equity, why you shouldn't dive into gold. This episode is like what things you shouldn't be investing in. But some of the other issues with investing with private equity, illiquidity is a major issue. When you invest in private markets, you are often making a commitment to keep your money invested for years to come, sometimes like 10 to 15 years. With traditional index funds, your money is very fluid. You can buy and sell when you want. There's also less transparency in private markets as well. It can be hard to know what you're actually investing in. They don't have to disclose what their holdings are because they're private. And so in the end, you know, everyday investors are now going to see increased choices inside of their 401k plans because of these private equity offerings. And you would think that having more choice is better, but it really isn't. You know, we're still fans of going the easy, less complicated route with far fewer fees and restrictions. When it comes to investing, you and I, we're all about the free filtered tap water that we can get out of our sink, not that expensive Fiji or Voss. Have you ever had Voss water before?
No.
Once I'm at a wedding.
I've seen like the bottles.
Yeah, the glass bottles. Dude,
they're fancy looking.
It's like $12 a bottle on Amazon. Ridiculous.
That's crazy.
Yeah, we would not recommend Voss or private equities.
Yeah, more choices seems better, right? But it's not always better. And like, I think of it as like the Aldi effect, right? When you go into Aldi, there's one ketchup, there's one mustard, there's one of everything. And it's actually easier to get in and out of there. I like having fewer choices at the grocery store.
And a lot of times that's all you need. You don't necessarily need the fancy ketchup, you know? I mean, come on, it's just ketchup.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, same thing when it comes to your investment choices. Private equity is something you're going to be hearing more and more about. You know, maybe if you work for a company, they're going to send you out an updated list of the funds that you can invest in. And you might see private equity options in there, and you might be tempted to think about it. And we would suggest avoiding it because there are some downsides associated with it. And there's just not a whole lot of additional upside.
Yeah. And secretly, I was hoping that you love Voss because it's actually from Norway as well. Basically, anything I find out that's from Norway, I try to like present to you as like, hey, don't you like this?
Well, you know, honestly, the Norwegians, man, it's such an expensive country. Everything is expensive there. So it makes sense to me that their bottled water, their fancy bottled water would also be like 10 times the price of a normal bottled water. But I still love my people.
Yeah, there you go. All right, man. We have a few more topics that we want to discuss, including small businesses as well as severance pay. And we'll get to all of that right after the break.
All right, we're back from the break, and we're going to talk about severance pay here in a second. That's something that, especially with all of the layoffs that have been happening recently, as we see the unemployment numbers continue to climb, that's something that's on a lot of people's mind. Like, how do I negotiate that severance package? And we're going to talk about that coming up. But first, Matt, let's talk about small businesses. And man, I was just thinking, after reading this article the other day, how sad would the world be if we didn't have local small businesses? Right?
It'd be a sad place, man.
We've talked so many times about all the local small businesses we have in the part of town that we live in Atlanta. And I feel like the cultural makeup of where we live is so much defined by the business owners that set up shop, the pop-up businesses that come around from time to time. So much of how I feel about my neighborhood is actually influenced by the people that choose to own and operate businesses there. But it certainly seems like the idea of having fewer small businesses is becoming more and more of a reality in our country, right? There are more than 31 million small businesses in this country, and they employ roughly half of the workforce. But sadly, many local restaurants, boutiques, and service providers are shuttering for good as the virus is lingering and continuing to hurt the economy. The New York Times actually published an article documenting local secondhand stores, and they are having a tough time in particular too.
Yeah, a lot of people are afraid of getting sick, even though it's not necessarily documented that you can get sick, you know, by the virus being on an object, right?
Right, yeah, for sure. And at the same time, even while these local secondhand, you know, retail shops are not doing very well, online ones are crushing it. Online reseller ThredUp has seen order volumes increase by between 100 and 150% during the pandemic. And we're seeing that trend where online shopping is becoming even more of a go-to because of the pandemic, and is making it even harder for important local small businesses to survive this.
Yeah, and as great as it is that these online businesses are doing well, they don't contribute to our local community, to our neighborhoods, right? And so it's good to see, though, that there are other businesses who are getting creative and finding ways to pivot in order to stay afloat. You know, for instance, we're seeing some restaurants becoming de facto grocery stores. One of our favorite restaurants here in Atlanta is they're selling packs of bacon and beautiful steaks, pre-made margarita mixes that they've created. They're finding creative ways to keep the goods flowing through their business, keeping customers happy. Man, there's also another article I saw too about the catering industry, which, you know, of course, it's been massively impacted. Some are setting up roadside stands to sell the food they create. A lot of folks are doing this with barbecue, one of our favorites, man. But then others, they're using their culinary skills to feed hospital workers who are on the front lines thanks to money donated via social media campaigns. And even still others have taken to pop-up outdoor restaurants. There are all sorts of ways, man, that different businesses, in particular restaurants, that they are pivoting in order to make sure that they can kind of weather the storm that we're in.
Yeah, man. Being an entrepreneur, especially in the food industry, it's never easy.
Yeah.
But it's like so heartening to see that despite these massive amounts of difficulty, so many are finding a way to make ends meet despite the challenges. And so, yeah, I think you and I, we would challenge people to support their local businesses and restaurants that are vital to the fabric of their community. We want to see these businesses survive and not only just survive the pandemic, but thrive and ultimately have a customer base that walks alongside them through this time. And of course, everyone's been affected differently, but if you have a pretty strong financial footing right now, try your best to contribute to those small businesses in order to help them make it through this pandemic. I know it might be easier to go and buy those secondhand clothes online or to do a quick order on a major retailer online, but maybe think again before you actually click to buy and think about a small business that you might be able to support in this time, even if it means spending a little bit more, because those businesses are like this crucial building block of our local economies and, like we said, the fabric of our communities.
Yeah, it's a small inconvenience for us to pay to just throw a mask on, get out there, and make a purchase in person during this pandemic, man. And another effect, actually, of the pandemic is that job losses, man, they continue to pile up. And a very real consideration if you've lost your job is severance pay if you have one of those fancy jobs. So let's go ahead and talk about that, man. Depending on the company you work for and how long you've worked there, you might or might not receive a severance package on your way out the door. You'll typically have 2 or 3 weeks to look over any sort of severance package that has been put in your hands, you know, before you have to make a decision. So this isn't necessarily something you have to rush in and immediately make a decision on.
Yeah, although your employer might hand you the package and be like,
stand there and like look at you.
Yeah. What you think? You want to sign it right now? And that's just, yeah, you don't want to be in that position.
You want this bonus now, don't you?
Yeah. You're like, actually, can you give me a minute to think it over? And by a minute, I mean like a week.
Yeah, to actually read over everything.
Yeah, exactly. And Matt, let's talk a little more about severance packages, right? It's important for people to know that they can actually negotiate the particulars of the package that they're receiving. Not every employer is going to budge, but it's worth pushing back in certain areas to either receive a larger payout or maybe to stay on your company's insurance for a longer period of time. Since severance packages typically aren't legally required, in most states, they're just not. It's less about knowing your rights and it's more about knowing your worth and discussing that amicably with your employer, maybe like highlighting some of the contributions that you've made to the company over the years. And I think doing that in a friendly way, that can increase the odds that you can get a better offer out of them as you depart. It might be helpful to ask other former employees during that week or two while you're thinking it over, who you're friendly with, ask them what they received and maybe how they were able to negotiate something different or better. But it's just important to note that initial severance offering is really a starting point that can allow you to negotiate something even better for yourself if you're willing to do your homework and put in the work.
It could also be helpful, too, to consult an attorney who can provide some negotiation assistance, right? There might be other strings attached to the severance package, like a non-compete or a confidentiality agreement. And so it's worth keeping in mind, if you plan to keep working in that same field, make sure that the non-compete is not a part of the final package. It's important to know what you're signing. And, you know, you might even be able to negotiate another month or two in salaried work so you can complete projects you're working on so it doesn't feel like you just kind of up and left. It's nice to have a little bit of closure there at the end of that stint.
Yeah, and a couple other little particulars about severance packages that can make a difference on maybe what you ask for or how you go about it. It's important to note that severance pay is taxable, so take that into consideration and hold some of that money that you receive as a payout in reserve for when you have to file your 2020 taxes next year. Also, the amount and length of severance pay will have an impact on your ability to collect unemployment. Since severance is considered remuneration, what you make over those months that you're still being compensated by your former employer is going to make it harder for you to qualify for unemployment. And we're still waiting to see whether federal unemployment benefit is going to remain in addition to the state benefit. Our elected leaders continue to take their sweet time, but it is important to note that you won't be able to collect on unemployment insurance if you're making over a certain amount. And oftentimes that severance pay will prevent you from receiving that additional benefit.
That's right. You may not qualify for that benefit, man. And one last thing, man, you know, we appreciate each and every one of our listeners, and we want to ask you to pay it forward. We want you to be the friend who helps your friend circle when it comes to personal finances. You know, even if you don't know a ton, you probably know more than many of your friends do. And, you know, they might be into a podcast like this one, but often it's easier to accept some easygoing guidance from a good friend. Maybe, you know, at least at first. We want you to kind of start that conversation, as a lot of folks have questions during these kind of unpredictable times that we're in. And, you know, as finances have gotten more complicated over the years, you know, at least having access to solid free financial help at your fingertips has increased. That's something, man, that I'm proud that you and I are able to do for folks. Is like our goal and mission is for folks to, you know, walk away from our episodes knowing more about their personal finances than they did before.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, too, it's important to note that when your friends are in trouble, they're not always going to telegraph it.
True.
And they're not always going to come up to you and say, hey, I've got this question, or can you help me with this? Oftentimes, you'll find out in maybe more of a roundabout way that your friend is having a tough time with money. They might just briefly mention that their small business isn't doing so well right now, or that their employer just cut pay across the board. And they're like, ah, man, that sucks, right? But little do you know that that pay cut has caused them to not be able to pay important bills in their life. And I feel like that comment can be the opening for us to provide some help to a friend, right? We actually talked about this back in episode 212, so you can check that out. But there's so much power in having money conversations with your friends and family. And in many cases, it's just more important to have those conversations right now, especially if you can be of service, of benefit. And that's typically how we listen the best, is to someone close to us, not preaching at us, but coming alongside us and offering us, you know, some friendly help, some friendly advice.
Yeah, man, that's right. And so, again, we're going to ask all of our listeners out there to kind of further that personal finance, that money conversation with your friends. And Joel, you know, I think that's going to be it, man, for this episode. Our listeners can find all of our show notes up on our website at howtomoney.com. And that's going to be it, man. So until next time,
best friends out.
Best friends out.